Donc quelques mots en français de bienvenue, bonjour, bienvenue à ceux qui ont bien voulu se déplacer malgré cette terrible canicule. Comme ça a été annoncé, le colloque se tient en anglais du fait de pas mal d'intervenants qui ne sont pas francophones. Alors je sais que évidemment ça pose toujours un problème au Collège de France de ne pas faire les présentations en français, mais là si on veut une discussion entre les intervenants, on est obligé de procéder de cette façon. Welcome to all, and I'd like to just say a few words, I mean to introduce the topic of our conference today. So as you know, Asia has long been represented as the exotic other, but in contrast with the others, such as the Orient, you know, what we would call now the Middle East or Africa, this Asia has been specifically depicted in terms of Oriental wisdoms, of peace and harmony. So I'm referring to this myth of Indian nonviolence, Chinese mythical harmony, and of course the famous Japanese Zen. You know, so this conference propounds to offer a counterpoint to these representations, and takes as a source of inspiration Professor Upinder Singh's, who is sitting here, her monumental book entitled Political Violence in Ancient India, and I recommend you to read this book. And Professor Singh has graciously accepted to take part in our conference and to give the first presentation. So, however, our conference is not meant to dwell only on ancient history. In spite of the illustration on the poster, which you have all seen, actually I should have put the slide, but forgot. So this is a photo taken at Qianling Mausoleum. It's the funerary mausoleum of the Chinese Tang Emperor Gaozong, and you find it in Xi'an. And in this mausoleum, you find in particular these alignments of statues, which have been identified as the statues of foreign envoys to the Chinese court, which have literally, you can see it on the photo, lost their heads. For a still unknown or very unclear reason. However, whatever the motivation behind this general beheading is, it can be taken as an appropriate illustration of violence in a political context. You know, it's quite strange that it's only these statues of foreign envoys which have been beheaded. So, as is obvious to any observer, today's world is a world of transition. So, for those of us, and I think it's most of us here, for those of us who were born in the aftermath of World War II, the world we live in now has no longer anything to do with the world we were born into. In just a few decades, the world order has changed radically, moving from a bipolar Cold War opposition between two massive blocs into a multipolar world in which entities of the former so-called third world are fast emerging as the actual potentialities for the future. Notably, entities on the Asian side, like China and India, which are by now regarded as the main challengers of North American supremacy, while Latin America and Africa are building up their potential to become the next entities to be reckoned with. It is therefore no longer possible to carry on seeing the world and analyzing it from the European viewpoint, which has prevailed for centuries in the wake of the so-called great discoveries around the year 1500. So the Eurocentric historical viewpoint has been challenged for some time already, in particular by what has been known as subaltern and post-colonial studies initiated by intellectuals and academics from various parts of the world, but many of whom are actually Indian-born. So the aim of the present conference is not to sail along this trend, which has become all too fashionable in academia and has itself come under critical fire for being still in some ways Euro-focused, but our aim will be to look afresh into the multifarious ways in which different parts of the Asian region have interacted through trade, intercultural exchanges, etc., without being always exempt of certain forms of violence, which in some cases have led to open conflicts and all-out wars. And these conflicts and wars have, of course, already been largely studied by historians. However, much less attention has been devoted to more subtle and less obviously physical and visible, but no less real and effective forms of violence, which are more of a symbolic or representational nature. So the viewpoint adopted by the present conference is by no means geopolitical or geostrategic, such as is currently represented in countless publications churned out by international relations think tanks. Our conference endeavors to bring to light certain commonalities and convergences in the narratives and self-representations of different entities in Asia that have been so far remained hidden, whether or not for deliberate reasons, and are still lurking in the background of contemporary inter-Asian relations, making them awkward, uneasy, or unbalanced. It has become therefore urgent and crucial to realize that there is more than meets the eye, so as to keep a lucid watch as historians and as citizens of the world on what is happening around us. So just to cite one example, one particularly striking example of a seemingly beautiful and wonderfully harmonious and well-meaning vision, but actually fraught with hidden violence, that is the Pan-Asian discourse that was developed and disseminated among a number of intellectuals, mainly from India, Japan, and China, in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. The idea of an overall unity linking together the different parts of Asia in opposition to Western modernity and values, which had been badly damaged by the horror and destruction of colonial wars and the First World War, was undeniably, this Pan-Asian discourse was undeniably a vision full of grandeur, and it did exert a powerful appeal on many of the best Asian minds of the time. But the Pan-Asian discourse was to be appropriated by the militaristic ideology developing in Japan, which then occupied a position of leadership in Asia, and was soon to launch a vast military campaign against China with the well-known consequences that ensued for all Asia. In retrospect, however, it turns out to be all the more important to look back into that discourse developed a century ago, since some elements are seen to be resurging in Asia today, especially in the ideological constructions put forward by China, which has by now replaced Japan in the regional leadership. At a time when China is reasserting its heft and centrality in the world order by mitigating its hard power, both economic and military, with a semblance of soft power, with a nondescript mixture of Confucian harmony and a vindication of China's supposed, I quote, 5,000 years of continuous civilization, as the Confucius Institutes would like to have it. And so at a time when China ambitions to embrace the whole world with its OBOR, that is One Belt, One Road project, by underpinning it with the notion of its peaceful rise, it is more than ever urgent to launch a seriously documented and critically minded research project on the way in which relations of power, no matter whether labeled hard or soft, have exerted intangible but nonetheless real and traumatic violence on the minds of people across Asia over the past centuries. So today, we're privileged to have a panel of eminent historians coming from India, Japan, Canada, and France to approach the topic from different angles, viewpoints, historical periods, and to exchange their views in a cross-Asia perspective. So I would end by saying that, you know, I thank you all for being here today and for traveling in some cases from very distant places or in difficult health conditions. And it's incidentally also, I would be very grateful to you for putting up with this exceptional severe heat wave over France and Paris. And in fact, we have another big conference in the next room on the climate, precisely. And the buffet that you see in the foyer is not for us. I mean, it's for these people worrying about the climate. And but in any case, in some respect, the Collège de France and especially this amphitheater is probably one of the coolest places you could think of today. So let me please remind the speakers to keep to a maximum of 25 to 30 minutes for each presentation, allowing for a few minutes for questions and answers, so that we can finish in time first for a refreshing lunch and finally for a relaxed evening. So thank you again for being all here. And I would call for Professor Upinder Singh from Ashok University to come to forward and make the first presentation. So